Hello and welcome to episode number 7 of Orcs in the Basement, an RPG video game podcast. Your friendly neighborhood podcast from weird Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Jay Ortega. I'm just coming back from Rose City Comic Con in Portland, and I have to say, it was an incredible time. This was my first time doing cosplay and going to Comic Con. I went as Senshi from Delicious in Dungeon, also known as Dungeon Meshi. Had it planned for months, and when I got there, I had so many people come up to me and tell me they love the cosplay. The energy was so welcoming and positive. Even though my Senshi cosplay was a little DIY, with the exception of the helmet, which I got from Etsy, and I'll link the creator in the show notes. It was still really, really boosting, confidence boosting to get like such a warm and welcoming reception from everyone. A lot of people came up to me and wanted to take photos, and it was great. I loved it. I went by myself, but I kept running into so many people from my job at the library and from the community. I never felt like a loner. Some of my favorite panels were queer comics telling personal stories with Ren Strap from the webcomic How Could You? Also, Jarrett Melendez, author of Chef's Kiss, which is a really popular comic book series, and Terry Blass from Eat Your Heart Out. It was awesome to see three queer authors geek out over making art and elevating other queer voices while fostering space at Comic-Con. There was also a whole section for retro gaming where I got the chance to play on the Virtual Boy and the Sega Dreamcast for the first time. I played about 15 minutes of the Virtual Boy. It had Mario Clash inserted, and it looked so unique with a mostly black and red color scheme that added some depth and layers to make it look like it was in 3D, which I thought was super ahead of its time, definitely a predecessor to the Nintendo 3DS, and such a treat for me to experience. I really love that there was an aspect or element of retro gaming con at this event, so it just gives you a taste of what's to come. For those of you who might be asking what the Virtual Boy is, well, I am going to add a little bit more context. So the Virtual Boy is a 32-bit tabletop portable video game console developed and manufactured by Nintendo. Released in 1995, it was marketed as the first console capable of displaying stereoscopic 3D graphics. The player uses the console like a head-mounted display, which the way they had it set up at the con, I felt like it was a little bit closer to being ergonomic, because it was elevated in such a way where you didn't really have to crouch down or put yourself in a very uncomfortable situation. But at home, I can see that happening a lot since, you know, sometimes if you have a portable device, you're not constantly thinking about like having it at the right height and all these other factors. So you place your head against the eyepiece to see a red and monochrome display. The game uses a parallax effect to create the illusion of depth. A mutual friend on Blue Sky mentioned this as one of Nintendo's few outright failures, and to be honest, I've only heard of the system in passing and never seen one until this weekend. The system looked stylish, and the opening to Mario Clash was very charming, using the system's gimmick, as Nintendo often does, to the max. The only thing that tripped me up was the weird controls with the elongated handles and the two D-pads. I had to take myself out of the game a few times just to kind of like memorize the layout. The Virtual Boy was panned by critics and was a commercial failure. Even after repeated price drops, its failure has been attributed to its high price. Unusual display consisting of only red and black, unimpressive stereoscopic effect, poor ergonomics, lack of true portability, and health concerns due to it giving many players headaches, dizziness, nausea, and eye pain. Stereoscopic technology in video game consoles reemerged in later years to more success, including Nintendo's 3DS handheld console. As of March 2021, it is Nintendo's lowest selling standalone console and the only one to have less than 1 million units sold, seconded by Wii U's 13.6 million units, which is unfair to compare to since the distance between these two is just still very staggering, so relatively. Beyond the Virtual Boy, there must have been like 50 other game consoles ranging across multiple decades, spread out across tables inside the large hall room, all with a surprisingly slim CRT monitor display, which I wish I had for myself. It looked really sleek and cool. They really gave that extra touch of retro nostalgia to the games. I could have easily spent all day there, but knowing that this was just a taste of upcoming Portland Retro Gaming Expo, the room next to it also featured dozens of retro arcade machines and all free to play with your Comic-Con pass included, of course. The first day, there wasn't a lot of people there, so I really got the opportunity to kind of jump from one console to the next. But by the second day, I guess word got out, and in general, the convention was just a lot more busy second day. I guess that's when a lot of the major panels were taking place. So it was definitely packed by then, and it was really hard to navigate. So I just spent a little time in going back to the Virtual Boy just to get a better sense of what that experience might be. All in all, I had a great time, and I hope I'm able to get a group of friends to go with me next year. Even though I had no issues like being largely by myself, I do think that I might be inspired to stay longer or go to different panels that I might not have, you know, experienced just by myself. So maybe I'll have a different cosplay across all 3 days is another thing. I got such a high from having people approach me in the Senshi cosplay that I definitely wanted to make a point of wearing cosplay all throughout the con, because a lot of my costume really relied on tape and just kind of DIY. It was really hard to replicate for a second time. So the major pieces I will save and use in the future. I just couldn't have it spread out throughout the 3 days. So next time, I'll definitely plan on having something at least for each day so I get a chance to like clean and wash and, you know, wear again. So anyway, my somewhat short recap of the last 2 days of Rose City Comic Con. Today's the last day. I might stop by for just a little bit and see what is in store for the last day. But if you were at Comic-Con this weekend and want to share your cosplay and some of your favorite moments, feel free to share with the pod. You can send them to orcsinthebasement@gmail.com. You can also check out some of my photos in Dungeon Meshi cosplay over at Blue Sky. They will be shared at orcsinthebasement.bsky.social. Now on to this week's quest board. So in this week's quest board, something circulating around the news, and I'll mostly keep it positive, I will say Astrobot, it has been such a success, not necessarily an RPG, but a new game worth noting. Astrobot was released to some stellar reviews. These past few days, the game has been heavily mentioned up and down my timeline, and I'm very excited to give this game a go. One review titled Astrobot the Kotaku Review by Moises Taveras says, "It is so completely possessed with joy and teeming with the life of everything that PlayStation has meant to people over the years. It is also a brilliant platformer in its own right, stuffed full of ideas that make it seem like a Sobi team is just getting started in this utterly endearing franchise. For all its charm and wonders, however, there's also a slightly melancholy feeling that Astrobot, which secondarily serves as a kind of museum of PlayStation's history, is putting that legacy and the spirit of innovation that defined it under the glass to be gazed upon and appreciated as a relic of yesterday, rather than infused and electrify the games of today and tomorrow." This, along with many other recent reviews, are lauding the game as a masterpiece, and I can't wait to play and share my thoughts on Astrobot While it's not an RPG, it does contain, from what I hear, a lot of nods to RPG history on the PlayStation. As you know, this game is PlayStation exclusive, and I'm excited for the future of this IP. It looks really great, and I've heard nothing but positive things. I'm really, like, excited to play something that's just so full of this type of energy. Next, we have Visions of Mana, which I mentioned in a previous episode as one of the newest and long-awaited installments to the series. Visions of Mana was released on August 29th and came out to some very positive reviews as well. In the IGN Visions of Mana review by Nick Ransbottom, he says, "With nearly 20 years between mainline games, this long-awaited RPG doesn't disappoint. It would be an understatement to say that Visions of Mana has high expectations to live up to. There hasn't been a main entry in the Mana series in nearly 20 years, with only spin-offs and 3D remakes of older games tiding fans over the game in the meantime. But thankfully, the wait was worth it. Although there are some few glaring flaws, Visions of Mana successfully brings the series into the modern age with excellent combat and class systems, as well as new casts of likable characters. It's not only a great Mana game, but it has become one of my personal favorite JRPGs in years. If I could sum up my impressions of Visions of Mana storytelling, in its opening acts with one word, it would be simple. And I mean that as a compliment. I'm a big fan of games tackling complex subjects or having dense lore to comb through, but not everything needs to be complicated just for the sake of it. Visions of Mana keeps its plot straightforward instead of bogging it down with needless exposition at first, at least." You can read more of Nick's review at IGN.com. This was one of my favorite reviews and really gets into it. I'm really excited to play the game. I haven't experienced a lot of Mana like I mentioned before. Secret of Mana was a game that I recently played and I was a little disappointed, but it's still a visually stunning game. I played the remake, which I might try and go back to the classic version just because it has a lot more charm. And not a lot has changed in terms of like the battle mechanics and all that. So I think I will like that a lot better. Now for another recent release, we have Star Wars Outlast, which came out to some mixed reviews, likely also influenced by the 6-day window period for reviewers to play through the game prior to its release, which is baffling that this big budget AAA game would not take into consideration the reviewers' lives and give them some extra time to calmly play through this massive open world game. Regardless, 76% on Metacritic is not a bad score, and I'm very excited to play this game. Maybe bumping some games back a spot in my backlog to experience it this year, hopefully. And finally, a game that is likely my most anticipated game of the year, The Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom, is almost out, releasing on September 26. Echoes of Wisdom was presented with new gameplay trailers, and I'm already so anxious to play it. Now, I don't have the money Nintendo thinks I have, but I'm hoping, like Tears of the Kingdom, I am able to trade in a few older games to get that release date copy. I might make it a tradition and also wait at the game store like the night of release, in line with other people. The game looks so fun and I'm loving the art direction, continuing with the style of recent Link's Awakening remake and pairing it with creativity and innovation presented in Tears of the Kingdom. As IGN's Brian Altano puts it, "But one of the best parts of being a Nintendo fan is never really knowing what to expect next." So you know I will be offline that entire week come release day to experience all the plot twists and innovations with this new Zelda entry, using that keyword hide feature to avoid spoilers once we get closer to release day. It looks wonderful, very charming. I just saw the most recent trailer and it gives you a little bit more of a taste of what the dungeons will look like, what the underworld has in store, and I'm so excited. I've heard a couple of sneak previews from some of the IGN folks I follow on YouTube, and they've mentioned that it does go back to a lot of that formula that makes Zelda so great. Prior to the open world games, we got like Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. It does have that Zelda dungeon magic, so I'm excited. And I just know this game is gonna do so well. So let me know if you're also excited and if you've seen the new trailer, what your thoughts are, and maybe some things you picked up on that you are experiencing for the first time. Continue with today's game highlight, which is Harvestella. I wanted to remind listeners that I'm always happy to read your questions and letters during the show. If you're wanting to write in, you can email me at orcsinthebasement@gmail.com for future mailbag episodes. And with that, let's take a little break. Okay, so Harvestella is a game I picked up earlier this year. I put in about 50 hours, and despite not being yet done with it, I already have a lot to say. Harvestella is a 2022 farm life sim role-playing video game developed by Livewire and published by Square Enix. It was released for the Nintendo Switch and Windows on November 4. It has been compared to Final Fantasy and Rune Factory and revolves around farming crops while attempting to save the world from a sudden appearance of a deadly magical plague known as Quietus. The game includes action RPG combat, with the player being able to choose one of 12 classes, including Fighter, Mage, and Shadowwalker. Other gameplay aspects include life simulation elements, where players can explore their village and talk to its residents, farming, cooking, crafting, and fishing. Besides the main story, each of the main characters have 10 missions that the player must complete to strengthen their relationship with them, but they don't have to do it right away. There are also side missions that the player can do anytime, and there are many, many, many side quests to keep you busy. Both the character and the side missions can be done by talking to a character with a symbol above them. The missions will not continue until the player receives letters from the characters requesting them to come see them. They can also be done even after the main story is finished. Should the player successfully bond with one of the main characters, it could result in a marriage. During combat, players can have up to two of the main characters to help them in battle. Some characters may leave the party temporarily. So it already has a lot of those live sim farm meets RPG tropes, but it's unlike anything I've ever experienced before. Like I mentioned in a skit earlier this week, Harvestella is a weird game. Not the RPG life sim I would urge people to go out of their way to get, but I've deeply enjoyed it. I'm still far from done, but I vibe with the cadence and I'm in no rush. The music and atmosphere make it such a relaxing experience. And I think this is like the height of what makes the game great. I really appreciate that Square Enix took this direction with the game and really tried to experiment with different elements of RPGs and life sims in order to make this a unique experience. I know Square recently decided to stop supporting some of their smaller projects in order to focus on their mainline games, and unfortunately this might include future sequels to Harvestella. I do think that going forward, taking an input from fans, Harvestella might have grown into such a great game. A better one, at least. Driving a little bit deeper into the story and gameplay mechanics, Harvestella does take a long time to get exciting. It is a slow burn, but that's where it leans on the coziness and immersive world it puts a lot of work into. The pastoral, quiet village of Leith is very charming. Navigating through the different biomes and villages in the game is pretty linear, like the main quest lines. But as a relaxing game I only played to easily progress through, it fulfilled its niche in my opinion. Compared to other farming sims like Stardew Valley, Coral Island, and Rune Factory, the farming, fishing, and battle mechanics all provide very, very little friction. And early on, we talked about the different classes. I feel like that might be a little misleading. There are a variety of classes, but there isn't a lot of complexity to them, and are often as complex as pressing the Y button over and over, which I know, as it sounds like a lot of other life sim RPGs, but this has almost no friction. It feels great as a game that you can easily progress through when you don't have a lot of energy or mind power to invest. I know this is worded in a way that may come across as pejorative, but in all sincerity, it has made it easy for me to pick up, especially when I'm not feeling like diving into a more complicated story, a little heavy RPG or action game. The music and atmosphere, like I mentioned, makes this such a calming and rapt experience. The characters are all very charming and dynamic, filled with a lot of humor and high emphasis on the humor. There are a lot of like laugh out loud moments, and it has a lot of wit. It's very well written. Early on, the economy in your farm does not make a lot of sense, and your ability to really make the most of your farm's potential becomes unlocked with the main story's progression. However, that doesn't mean that you can't just spend several days just figuring stuff out in the farm. It is very forgiving and lends you time and all the time you want to really like figure things out, collect things, and kind of prepare your farm. The farming and caring of animals does make it a more fruitful experience over time. But for me, it didn't quite get there until maybe 20 hours into the game, because this game does not have a lot of friction. Your choices with raising animals is a little limited, and it is not as extensive as Stardew. So far, I have two characters, and I can't remember the names of them. When it comes to farm animals, I mean, you have Clo-Clo, which is a chicken, and then the other one, which is a llama-looking goat creature. So they're all their own species, but so far you only get two. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of variety when it comes to the farm animals. And like Stardew and other farming sims, you get to pet them every day, feed them, and watch their hearts grow to then yield more valuable products. With the Clo-Clos, you get eggs, and with the llama looking sheep thing, you get milk, goat milk. And yeah, as you can sell it for profit. Very simple, not a lot of friction, like I keep mentioning. Next, for another really important aspect that players might be interested in, with your character creation, you're able to choose between non-binary, male and female. And while the character looks exactly the same regardless of your choice, it's great that you're given the choice of gender identity, skin color, and body type. Not too much in terms of customization, so otherwise all very simple. I haven't gotten very far with the romance in the game, but so far, it seems you can grow your relationship with a few main story characters, regardless of gender identity, which is awesome. Looking it up online, it does seem like it's likely post-game content, which would allow you time to grow your relationship. Each character has a unique story quest that you can unlock as you progress in your relationship. Despite not being done with the game, I have grown points with Cress by fulfilling some of her character quest early on. She's a physician in the game, one of the first characters you meet, and plays a big role in welcoming you to town after she finds you passed out during quietus at the beginning of the game, with that very popular trope of your main character having amnesia and not remembering where they come from, what their purpose is, and who they know. So that plays, of course, a major part in the story as it unfolds. And then going back to the romance, there is a total of six different characters you can make a connection with throughout the game. And like I said, this is not something that is not fully open to you until you're done with the main quest. So those are just some of my thoughts on the game so far. I do think it is a weird game. It has a lot of potential, but I do think it holds a very special place in the RPG subgenres when it comes to its unique take on that intersection of RPG and life sim. It is such an immersive experience, and I think they put a lot of energy into the world itself. And had they gotten a bigger budget, maybe it would have been a much better game. The game does have a steep price. It is $59.99. I'm telling you, wait for it to go on sale. At times you can find it for $29.99. Being that it's mostly available on Nintendo Switch, the game does not go on sale often, but if you can find a cheaper used version physically, go that route. I would not recommend it for $59.99. It is not AAA game quality. I do think that people who make games deserve to get paid and all that, and absolutely have the support of the community, but it's just not there, I don't think. The game has a lot of Square Enix weirdness and charm to it overall. I would give it a solid 7 out of 10, as I do think it is an important entry to the farming sim RPG canon, but I do hope that it plants the seeds for a better future game in this very niche genre. Thank you. And now for our last part, which is some loot for your journey back to camp. So connected to RPG roots, we have this movie that is called Heaven's Egg, or pardon me, it is called Angel's Egg, and I watched it on YouTube. It's by the same artist that did all the artwork for Final Fantasy VI. Angel's Egg is a Japanese art film original video animation written and directed by Mamoru Oshii, released by Tokuma Shoten on 15 December 1985. The film was a collaboration between artists Yoshitaka Amano, which you might recognize from Final Fantasy, and Oshii. The film stars two nameless characters, a young girl who protects an egg, who bonds with a boy who has a dream about a bird. It was the first original project by Oshii and carries themes found in other works. It features very little spoken dialogue and a story that is strongly allegorical, which has led to many viewers being confused about the film's supposed meaning. It's definitely one of those movies, at least from my perspective, where I thought it was visually stunning and has a lot to say when it comes to the history of animation and, you know, where a lot of ideas have been born from. But I definitely had so many questions towards the end that I had to watch so many YouTube videos kind of unpacking that lore. So it was one of the original projects by Oshii and carries themes found in other works. And the film uses biblical allusions and has been described as a cult classic. As of the release of this episode, it's available on YouTube for free. So check it out and let me know what you think. That's how I saw it. I got to see the whole film and it was really, really good. I really liked it. It definitely helped to have some video essays afterwards to really unpack the story. But I was so grateful to have the opportunity to see Into a Window of Time and get to see other works by Yoshitaka Amano, who I am a big fan of. And I wish that technology was set up in a way where his artwork really got to shine in games like Final Fantasy VI. I think a lot of the sprites do reflect that, but being that it is very limited during that time, a lot of his concept art wasn't fully integrated into the style of the game, and I really, really want a game in the future that does that. And for the last recommendation, I've also been watching a lot of videos by Internet Pitstop. He does a lot of retrospective videos on other atmosphere in video games and anime. This is where I heard about Angel's Egg, by the way. Recently, I watched The Rise and Fall of Pokemon Regents and found it to be very nostalgic and atmospheric. His videos are delivered with a lot of humor, but also deep cuts into the progression of the series. So yeah, they do tend to be very long, and if you're like me and you love those 3-hour long essay videos, then I highly recommend his work. You can also do it in chunks. It's a great thing to have playing while you're like grinding away at some longer RPGs or doing something a little bit more passive on your day, like maybe you're doing data entry at work or what have you. It's a great video to have on the background or just like have it be the focus. His work is really great and I really recommend it. And with that said, that wraps up this week's shorter episode. So yeah, if you do have some comments, questions, or just in general, some photos that you took from your experience at Comic-Con, feel free to share. And let me know what you think of this week's loot and episode overall. I hope you all have a safe journey back to camp. And thank you so much for tuning in once again. Nos vemos and happy gaming.